The interesting thing about the railroad is it not only does it change life and it changes travel, it changes business, but we also see the rise of super corporations and these businesses that are not local. They are huge and they reach into all these different places. The Boston and Maine Railroad was probably one of the first super corporations in New Hampshire and New England. It's been said that they had more sway on the local government than any other entity. There was a governor at one point, I believe, that had been the president of the Boston and Maine. And so the B&M Railroad, and railroads in general all over the country, but in New England, we're talking about the Boston and Maine, was your super company. And they start owning property. They start owning hotels. They start building hotels. They buy up riverboats and they buy up other forms of transportation so they can control, kind of monopolize transportation in New England. When we talk about Mount Washington, the ship on Lake Winnipesaukee, the original Mount Washington was purchased by the Boston and Maine Railroad. And if you look at old photos of it, it says Boston and Maine Railroad on the side of this boat. So that was a way for them to control the experience of travel and tourism. When you're coming to the railroad in New Hampshire, you're taking the Boston and Maine to get there. You're taking the Boston and Maine to go around the lake. You're staying in a hotel that's owned by or subsidized by the Boston and Maine. And so it's a huge company that is profiting completely on the travel experience in New Hampshire. And that's really interesting because before that, we don't see that type of industry exist almost at all in New England. Things are locally owned. They're owned by companies and families. It's not this huge company that's owning all this stuff. So that shifts completely. And the interesting thing too about the Boston and Maine is that they promote this very heavily and they start releasing pamphlets to the public that oftentimes is just a painting of a mountain and it says, you know, see the White Mountains. And then at the bottom, it says Boston and Maine Railroad, or a painting of the ocean, or a painting of a hotel somewhere. And so they recognize that people want to go places and see different things. And they're advertising to the public in a very large and general way. And so advertisement, graphic design, all these things are, you know, used by the railroad to promote their services. And we start to see the change of how people do business. And the railroad is really the first engineer of that in New England. There was pushback against the railroad expansion and monopolizing initially when the railroad starts to replace canals and replace boat traffic, replace stagecoach companies. As the railroad is becoming the dominant form of life in New England, a lot of these things are going away because the railroad can do it better and more efficiently. And we do see some drama with that. We also see some drama with the railroads being built. The railroad oftentimes was built on land that had been owned by people previously, and the government took it by eminent domain to allow the railroads to be constructed. So there is pushback, and there is definitely some tension. But very quickly, we start to see the benefits that the railroad is bringing sort of shadow some of that pushback. And I think in most places, the railroad provided a lot of benefits that people started to enjoy, and maybe the tension wasn't as open. Eventually, that changes a little bit, but for sure, when it first started, the pushback was oftentimes shadowed by people didn't have another choice. If you live in a small town and you want to go to the city, you have to take the railroad. If you want to ship your product, you want to ship your milk or your cream to Boston, you got to do the railroad. There's no other option. And I think people very quickly realized that while it may have monopolized in some ways, due to the nature of New England at the time, there just wasn't any other way to do it. But interestingly enough, we start to see some trouble for the railroad appear as early as the 1890s. A lot of these companies I had mentioned were independent companies that had been built. So a lot of the railroad lines built in New Hampshire had started out as separate companies. So the Northern Railroad, the Concord Railroad, the Concord and Portsmouth, these were all competitor companies. By 1900, the Boston and Maine Railroad has absorbed and swallowed up all of these small companies. And so the Boston and Maine has a monopoly in New Hampshire, and that creates some problems for them because they don't really need three different lines in and out of Concord. They don't really need a line that runs to New Boston, New Hampshire. It becomes redundant. There's a lot of things that they have acquired through mergers and acquired through aggressive business, and now it's unnecessary or it's redundant. And so 1890s, 1900, the Boston and Maine starts to look at some of the things that they've acquired and realize that maybe they've stretched themselves a little far. That becomes even worse by 1910 and 1915 when the automobile starts to really come into play. And we start to see the attention shift away from developing things by railroad to developing things by automobile. And one of the very first big indicators of that is the Mount Washington Hotel, which was built with the automobile in mind. The Mount Washington was a later hotel, and instead of being built with the railroad in mind, it was built with the idea that people can drive their car up here and stay for a honeymoon or a vacation in the White Mountains and get there by their own automobile. And that is sort of the first indication that the railroad might be in trouble. 1920, 1925, the Boston and Maine reaches its peak in New Hampshire. It has the most mileage that it will ever have. It's operating the most trains that it will ever have. That's also the time when we start to see automobile sales really take off. And one of the very first casualties for the railroad is passenger service to rural towns. By 1936, 1938, the Boston and Maine is no longer running passenger trains to small towns like Goffstown or New Boston, Ware, New Hampshire, places like that, because people can drive their own cars. State roads are starting to get a little bit better, a little bit safer. And so probably about 1930, when the Great Depression hits, that coupled with the development of the automobile starts to trouble things for the railroad. Then, of course, we start to see the rise, and this is getting ahead a little bit, but interstate highways in the 1950s, airlines, tractor trailers, and truck traffic. And as the public shifts more from public transportation to private transportation, starting in the early 1900s, it starts to replace a lot of the services that the railroad offers, just like the railroad had replaced a lot of services that had been there previously. It's definitely a shift towards convenience and a shift towards personal freedom at the expense of public transportation and the railroads. I think for a young person that's interested in history or trains, for that matter, a lot of people my age that I've talked to who are in their 20s, in their teens, even younger than that, are playing catch up for sure. You know, if you grow up in Andover, New Hampshire, or Derry, New Hampshire, or any of these towns that haven't seen a train for 40 years or longer, you know, you have questions. It's a part of your town. It's a part of your community. There were trains here, but what did it look like when they were here? What kind of trains were running? How often were they running? What were they carrying? And so it becomes an investigation. It becomes, let me find pictures so I know what it looks like. Let me find documents and paperwork and answer these questions. Let me fill in these gaps because I wasn't there to see it, you know? In my case, it was just before I was born. For people younger than me, it was, you know, half a century ago. And so it's answering these questions. We're chasing something that's getting further and further away every day. And a lot of these places will probably never see a train again. And so it becomes harder to relate to the further that it gets away.